Thanks for tuning in to the World XP Podcast. If you're enjoying the content, please drop a sub, drop a like, and let us know your thoughts below in the comments. Also, please consider supporting our podcast via the link below. It really helps us out.
Noah, welcome to the World XP Podcast. I feel like this has been a long time coming, but we're finally here. Welcome.
Thank you, Eric. I'm happy to be here.
So why don't you start off with, obviously, as your name thing says, you are the face behind the DMV sports media, all the soccer people watching the live streams and commentary for a lot of the games. But why don't you do a quick intro, and then for those listening who know what's going on, we'll get the question from the previous guest, and then we'll jump right into everything.
Thanks, Eric. Sounds good. Yeah, so as you stated, I'm Noah, and I run DMV sports media. I started DMV sports media back in 2021, when I was playing way too much pickup soccer, and my wife said, maybe it's time you could get a second job since I'm not good enough to get paid to play, obviously. So I said, all right, well, watch it. I'm gonna get paid to watch soccer. And so I just went on Facebook Marketplace. I bought some cameras and just started showing up at games that I was finding on the internet. You know, I think it was EPSL and a few other random local and regional leagues. I was just showing up and filming games, and of course, eventually teams see a guy with a camera at a game and they're like, where do I get this film? And then they start to talk to you. And so then I started to, you know, get early contracts with teams who wanted me to come film. The real breakthrough was when I started to figure out how to live stream in addition to just recording and posting highlights, which is pretty much what it was early on. The live streaming obviously really allows fan base to engage with their team in a real-time setting. I mean, people like watching the games afterwards, but there's just nothing comparable to watching a game as it's happening, as the goal is scored, that excitement. And so, you know, early it was really rudimentary. I mean, I had a cell phone taped to a camera because I couldn't figure out how to get the internet to, you know, utilize the actual feed from the camera. So I had two forms of a feed, like the recording for the highlights, and then the cell phone was recording the live streaming. So, you know, we've come a long way, but you know, that's basically the progression of DMV sports media. Somewhere along the lines, I was asked to come and help out in a commissioner capacity for a new league that was being formed up in Maryland. That is the Maryland Super Soccer League. And I was like, well, I have no idea how to be a commissioner. I don't know how to get fields, referees, et cetera, and schedule. And they said, it'll be easy. We'll help you, they said. And it was not easy. And I got some help, but probably not as much. But I've really grown to love it. And, you know, I'm still running the Maryland Super League. And, of course, now we've started the Virginia branch, the Virginia Super Soccer League. So now it's growing into kind of a regional league. And, of course, all of those matches are live streamed. You know, media coverage is a big component of the Super League, and kind of just reflecting on the talent of all the players and teams we have in this area.
Yeah, I think we are definitely blessed. I had a friend, Zach, he lives in Delaware, and he would fit in well to the level of these leagues. But in Delaware, there's nothing like that. So he was always going on different trials with NISA teams and stuff, and he just stopped playing because he was like, And that sucks. So we are definitely lucky to have it here. So the question from previous guest at the time of, yeah, this will be out in order. I don't know. Sometimes I record them out of order, or out of chronological order. But this is from a guy named Dr. Fred Mednick, who founded Teachers Without Borders, which is a global organization to kind of like give teachers the support they need. And it all started off with the question, what's outside your window? And it's more of a figure, like metaphorical, than literally like, oh, there's grass. But it's like, what's outside your window? And then the follow up was, what would you like to see outside your window? So in the world, I guess.
Wow. Let me take a moment to consider that question. Yeah. It's deep and profound. What is outside my window? I am going to contain it to the soccer landscape. Yep. Because that's primarily what my subject matter is. Right now, I see a lot of issues in the soccer landscape, especially on the professional level. If anyone follows me on Twitter, maybe first, don't follow me on Twitter. But second, you'll see I've deeply displeased with how the U.S. Open Cup, the most historic, you know, soccer tournament in the nation, has been handled, both in media coverage and, you know, the rules of how MLS is allowed to participate or not participate. And then the MLS unwillingness to kind of participate with, you know, any other league, lower leagues, with the exception of using them as a farm league. I have a big problem with that. I think the NFL and MLB and NHL model is fine for those other sports. I'm not trying to revolutionize all sports in the United States, but I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel when it comes to soccer, football, you know, in the United States. There's a proven model that exists. And I would love to see us adopt some sort of that model. Obviously, we have a larger geography than other countries. And so I'm not at a stage where I'm able to influence the larger, you know, professional level leagues. But at the micro and the grassroots level, I do take a lot of joy in helping to grow the game in whatever small part and small way that I can. And my hope is that over time, with, you know, connecting with more teams, collecting more resources, and finding more like-minded people, we can start to affect change, you know, initially at the local level, and eventually, who knows, maybe take it up and start to grow into some of the higher level leagues and competitions.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think I've said this before on the podcast, but I think if you ask the players, at least at the grassroots level, the amount of teams that are in the area, I think if you ask them if they'd prefer to have all these different leagues or one league where there's like promotion and relegation, I think that they would prefer one league where I don't think there's one amateur league in the area right now where every single game is very competitive. I think that's a fair statement. So I think if you ask the players that they would prefer that. So I don't know. It's like everybody's trying to influence it in their own way. And that's good, but also then we've got 17 leagues. So I don't know. It's the landscape is a little bit weird at the moment, but I think at least compared to 2 years ago, it seems to be clearer than it was. I don't know if you also feel that way.
Yeah, I would say at least in the DMV, I can't speak, you know, more so on a wider scale. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I can, but I'll be less informed about it. You know, there are still, you know, that alphabet soup of leagues, you know, the SLs, the EPSL, UPSL, SSL, APL, whatever, all in this area. But I have seen on my end kind of a greater willingness between at least a few of the leagues to potentially work together. Mm-hmm. And I won't name specifically names, but, you know, I've been in talks with other leagues about how we might be able to get that together. And The truth of the matter is it is difficult because different teams have different logistical, you know, kind of barriers, different financial barriers. Some teams want to play on a certain weekday or on a weekend. Some teams have, you know, they want all the bells and whistles, all the live streaming, and some teams just want to show up and play and they don't have very much money to meet a larger criteria. And so those are all barriers. I don't say those to say it shouldn't happen because I absolutely believe in what you're saying. But I'm a pragmatist and I like to take a look and see what all the barriers will be before we go ahead. And one of the ideas that I had kind of put forward and I'm pursuing right now would be, why don't we start with some tournaments, some annual tournaments, sort of mm-hmm. like this MDV Cup that's going on, which is put on by the Maryland State Soccer Association, but it could be even something that we, the leagues, you know, kind of put on during the summer. And it's, you know, like a true to form Champions League where you qualify by achieving a certain place within your league. And then if you logistically can't participate, it falls to the next team because, you know, it's amateur soccer. Teams sometimes take a break, but something of that sort, then, you know, we, the leagues are cooperating and then the teams get to feel out, you know, how is it like working with this other commissioner? How is it like working with these other teams? Do we have a shared kind of mission? And then that could open us up to, you know, maybe a shared league later on. I think it's going to be a gradual step-by-step process.
100%. I think at least the tournaments are a good step. I think this is the first year for the MDV Cup, correct?
Yeah, this is the first year. So it's a celebration of the centennial, I believe, the 100-year anniversary of Maryland State Soccer, but the plan is for it to continue to exist. You know, it's going to be an annual tournament. It may exist in a slightly different form. This year, we were just kind of figuring it out, but that is the plan.
Very nice. Because then you also look at some of like the National Amateur Cup qualifiers or even U.S. Open Cup qualifiers, and it seems like even for me, I'm kind of like plugged in, I guess, to kind of to the amateur scene and all the leagues and the tournaments and stuff that's going on. Even for me, sometimes it's hard to keep track of everything that's going on. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's good. The amount of tournaments, the amount of competitions are there. Like the field space is there. Obviously, the refs are there. The players are there. The teams are there. The infrastructure is kind of there to make it all happen for that amount of games necessary. But that, yeah, like you said, the logistics part can be a bit difficult. Obviously, we're not professionals, so everyone has other jobs. And so it can be a bit difficult to make that happen, especially when you talk about like roster locking and things of that nature. It's like, well, if this team does this, but then they don't have enough players, so they want to add a few players because to fill out the roster, then it makes it all like all those questions, I would imagine, make things quite difficult to organize something like that. As I'm sure you found out learning how to be a commissioner. So, what was that like to learn to be a commissioner with on the job? Here you go, swim.
One word, stressful. But yeah, just kind of, you know, learning, I guess, to have in certain situations when to have a heavy hand and when to be firm, and also remembering that we are an amateur league and sometimes knowing when to be pliable, you know, when to say, okay, you know, we are going to be, you know, flexible in this week because maybe not everyone understood the registration or something. And then realizing when a team's just trying to get one past you and, you know, game the system. I think there's things that, you know, happen that outside of my control that now don't bother me when, you know, a team gets upset, i.e. they disagree with a ref call that maybe the ref did get wrong or something. I don't let it, you know, whereas in the first seasons, I'm like, oh my gosh, the league's going to fall apart because the referee messed this up and it's all on me and it's my fault and I should just quit. But like, it's not like that, you know?
Yeah. How do you deal with the problems with teams disagreeing with the refs? Because I've played on teams where that seems to happen every game. Then you hear chatter of like, oh, we're going to write to the commissioner so we never get this referee again, or like things of that nature. How do you handle that? Because there's I don't know how the ref kind of certification process works, but generally once you start playing at a certain level, you see the same kind of like group of or pool of refs. And so if you've got teams that are saying, well, I'm never going to play if that one's there. And then that list of refs that they say that for grows and you only have a limited number of refs. Like, how do you deal with that in the cycling and the pooling? Because it's not just your league that needs the refs, it's all the leagues in the area. So it's not like you have the luxury of choosing that, but just speak to that on kind of a general, because I imagine that there are other teams that feel similarly about other refs. And so you've got a merry-go-round of like, oh, that ref needs to go there and that one needs to go here, but oh, that team doesn't like that one, so I need to move this guy over here. Or how does that work for you as the commissioner?
Yeah. So I try to, when possible, use information, you know, to combat, you know, complaints. I try to live in the solution. So if a team wants to complain about something, I don't dismiss their concern, but I like to kind of explain the situation. You know, we'll go to whatever the infraction that is being discussed. And it may turn out that the team may not have seen it in a proper light. Maybe they were unaware of a technical law, you know, with regards to offside. There's lots of different considerations that have to be made that teams aren't always aware of. So that's kind of step one. You know, when mistakes are made, you know, and especially multiple mistakes made, you know, I do relay that information to the assigner. You know, sometimes there's better performances and the refs do like to know that. And they do enjoy having that video as a tool. But the reality is we can't just blackball referees, not to mention it can create kind of a situation where teams are influencing the outcome. I mean, you can't pick your referees. And so, you know, I explained that, hey, we have a limited pool of referees. Well, you know, if there's some weeks where teams may not ever realize how close we get to not getting enough referees. We always seem to make it work, but pulling and picking apart, you know, the referee pool and, you know, lessening it is not going to help us. So, you know, there may be a situation where a certain referee may be recommended to not be a center referee for, you know, a certain time until, you know, he learns the ropes or whatever. And I had that conversation with the assigner. But I will pretty much set it as a rule that you're only allowed to, throughout the course of the whole season, blackball, if you will, one referee. You know, I do allow that, okay, if there's one referee you really do have a bad experience with for whatever reason, that can be your one. But, you know, you don't get any do-overs. So use it wisely. And I find that once, you know, that is made, honestly, most teams don't even end up trying to say, hey, that's our referee, because they want to wait and see if there's a worse referee, which doesn't ever end up coming along. And it's like, you really have to think about, was this that bad of an experience? Or, you know, or can I just move along? Was I that upset on game day? That's another tactic. I try not to engage as much, you know, right after the heat of the battle. One day later is usually my rule. Sometimes I do a better job of that than in other situations, but usually you find if you wait a little bit, teams are more willing to calm down and see it from a more unbiased perspective. Whereas at game day, we're fired up, we're feeling the warrior spirit, and you don't want to have that conversation then.
Yeah, it feels like a very unforgiving position for you to be in, because nobody's making good decisions like in the game. And it's a bit unfortunate that sometimes the refs have to get to the brunt of that, right? Because they're only human. But at the end of the day, then there's some things where you're like, oh, dude, come on, man. And it's like to balancing that out, where it's like, all right, ref made a mistake, that's fine, we move on to where the reaction can get bigger. It feels, I don't know, for me, when I'm playing, like, I try to have that understanding. It's like, all right, ref probably didn't see it or whatever. It's tough for sure. And then for you to have to be mediator all the time, it feels like very. That was one thing where I'm like, I don't know. I'll stay over here, and you guys could complain about it, because it's at the end of the day, it's like, it's amateur soccer, and we all love soccer. But it's not that deep, and it's like, it's not like there's a gazillion dollars on the line and whatever else. So I don't know, that's just how I feel about it. But you have to take that in the face a little bit, which I imagine is not the most fun.
No, it's not my favorite part of it, but I will say, I think it's gotten better, you know, just accepting that I can control what I can control and can't control. And I also want to say, I think we do have a great pool of referees. You know, I've seen lesser pools, we'll just say that. And I think it's one of those situations where you don't really know what you have until you see a worse version of it. And, you know, I think we've got an excellent pool of referees here that, you know, they do want to do a good job. I think, you know, sometimes the accusation gets thrown around, oh, they're just here for the money. I mean, if you look at the pay breakdown, it's not that much money.
No.
And, you know, they're not doing it because they're paying off their mortgage and their, you know, their kids' college tuition. They're not making that kinds of money for amateur games. They're doing it because it's their craft and they treat it as something they want to get better. I listen to those conversations between the refs before and after the game. They're there early, sometimes earlier than the teams, discussing, you know, how they want to approach the game. They're there reflecting after the game, and they always are asking for the video links to see how their performance was. So, you know, I guess I would implore teams to consider that and have a little compassion for the referees in the situation, because, you know, there's always a bad apple, but more often than not, the referees are trying to do their best. And so they want to do a good job, just like any player does, but they make mistakes just like any player does.
100%. And those are the things, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you and have that be illuminated for people. Cause I feel like people don't really consider it that much. I do. Shout out to Josh. I love Josh. He's a great ref.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like people don't really consider it. And like, I've noticed that the refs are there before the games. And even when I was playing Arena, I would have conversations with refs before games. And most of the time, like, even if they don't really agree with what you're saying, if you approach them in a way that, like, would that make sense, they'll listen to you at least.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you don't get the call you want as the player, but that's all right. But it's like, most they're approachable. And it's like, as long as you, like, hey, this guy did this thing, can you watch it next time? And if you say it like that, most of the time they'll be like, yeah, sorry, I missed it, I was looking at some other thing. And then you move on, and it creates that the relationship where it's like when, at least for me personally, when I feel like when I actually get a little bit heated, which doesn't happen often at all, but then I feel like at least the refs that I know or have spoken to kind of have an awareness of like, oh, he doesn't normally get like that. Maybe something happened. It's like the boy who cried wolf type thing. Because if you're always complaining, then you're never gonna get the one that you want. And so the refs have to consider all of these things all of the time, and it's a thankless job for them as well. So I
Yeah,
don't know.
absolutely. And I get it too. I've been a player who's gotten angry. I'm not saying, you know, it doesn't happen, but having that self-awareness to maybe calm yourself down and then maybe at some point later in the game say, hey, I'm sorry for what I said earlier. I was, you know, upset and, you know, I wanted to defend my teammate or whatever the situation was. And then just, you know, have that human compassion to go and say, hey, you know, I respect that you're another person out here doing his best. Sorry for what I said. And the referees are gonna be like, dude, you're a competitor. I get it. Like, as long as you're, you know, cool about it, it's okay. We have, you know, those moments. They're not that thin-skinned. They're used to putting up with a lot of abuse. So
Yeah,
I think they're
I didn't expect us to spend 20 minutes on refs.
pretty.
So not but okay, so you started the company in 2021, and you figured out the live streaming part. Was the technical aspect of making sure that the audio quality, or well, I guess audio came a little bit later, but the video quality, was that like a step by step, or were you doing videography stuff prior, or was this all brand new to you? And it's just like, let me figure out a way to get the game onto a screen somewhere that that people can watch it later, or were you doing stuff with video cameras before?
No, it was very. I won't say I've never, because back when I was playing many, many years ago in high school and trying to get recruited for, you know, college, I did have, you know, cameras. And I think my dad or maybe a parent on the team would film, and I did have a little bit of experience with whatever technology was available back then, you know, editing highlights and the like. But I haven't done that kind of thing for 11, 12 years, and so it was just an idea. I don't have any background degree or anything with videography. I was just kind of figuring out, you know, what it would be like. But I do have the advantage. I always liked watching highlights from the Premier League. I liked watching amateur games when they were available. So I knew what I wanted to see as a fan. And then part of the benefit of just going to fields and filming games for free was I didn't have that pressure of needing to do it for money initially. So I was just kind of figuring it out and experimenting with different cameras and different angles and different tripods, et cetera. Kind of the innovation was early just, you know, figuring out whether to have a camera, you know, on a regular tripod, or then I later invested in like this tall 20 some foot, you know, tower that I control. And I still have a couple of those towers. But an ideal situation is, you know, having a press box where you can, you know, sit and kind of manage all the gizmos, because I also control the replay and I do the commentary for most games. And it's a little difficult when you have like this tower tripod. It's like you can only do one or the other. I could and do sometimes have like a team where it's me and a couple other individuals, but that's a higher budget thing. Obviously, you've got to pay each person, and usually for the amateur scene, I think one person is enough to handle it, and that's where we kind of fall with the budget. But you're right, the commentary was much later. I did try it early on when I was filming games, but I was like, oh, this will be easy. I can talk about soccer, and immediately realize it's not so easy. And I will credit you with bringing that idea back, because I remember in the beginning of the Virginia Super League, yeah, you were like, you know, well, it would be great if we get some commentary. That would be, you know, make it so much better than just like a kind of a audio-less game. And I was explained all the reasons why it would be difficult, but you know, once I started thinking about it, I was like, I could try to do this. You know, it's not going to be great, and it was a little rough, but you know, I think that it's come a long way since that moment.
Well, that idea wasn't even out of like oh, it would be great, because often I watch the game, like when I'm watching for like to watch back a performance or something, or for tactics or whatever, often I have it on mute anyways, not because I dislike your commentary or anything, but it was more like I had a friend who was trying to get into this, like the commentary. He was doing commentary at his local college or whatever. And I was like, that would be a good idea for you to bring in somebody from Mason who's doing like a sports journalism major or whatever, or wants to become a commentator. And it's like, it could be just an easy way to add something. And then also the Christos guys, in USL 2 were doing it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. That and the scoreboard and the time, where the time is much like cleaner now. And I think compared to like the whole operation just seems like it's growing. And you can see, at least for me, paying attention to what you guys are doing, the steps that are being taken, it seems cleaner. It seems more professional. And the replay feature as well, you're like continuing to add more and more things and cool things in there. And it just looked like, yeah, for what I first, when you had the time as just like in the top right corner, it was just like only in white numbers.
Yeah,
and the
that
score
was
and the score was kind of just like there a little bit with the three letter things compared to what it is now with the league logo and the color scheme and everything. And I know it's more work to do the overlay and stuff, because I do it for myself for the podcast and other things. It like takes a little bit of time, but the product is like, now it's, yeah, good job, man.
Thank you, appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's earlier we were just like, I think it was the timer is a video from YouTube that I just like downloaded the video and just threw it up on the screen.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The text is just a text box, and then I had like boxes of black or white behind it that were like just for contrast. But yeah, no, this current setup is much better.
So when it comes to, I did want to ask you about the commentary piece, about you doing it, because obviously, like a lot of forms of communication, podcast included, it seems easy when you just hear somebody talking and you're like, oh, that's not that bad, and then you do it and you're like, oh, this is that good. But so you've been learning, obviously, as you've been going. How's that process been for you, from not obviously when you tried it a few years ago, but to when you really started picking it up now, and having Alfred along, who, by the way, Alfred is a phenomenal commentator, and he could go somewhere and do something with that, I feel like. But how is it having him in the booth with you and the learning process for yourself?
Well, I early, you know, in between that time where I initially tried it years ago and when I picked it up after you made the suggestion, I did have the valuable experience of working with Christian and Danny up at the Christos USL 2. I was doing their video. And of course, Christian and Danny are incredibly experienced commentary guys. They do a lot of D1 games and across different sports. Seeing how they work really kind of helped me, even though I wasn't participating in the commentary at the Christos games. I was always there listening, you know, just on the video, and how they kind of worked play by play and color, you know, together. And then when there was just one of them there, how the one would just pick up, and how they would prepare before the games going up, and you know, it's, you know, getting the right numbers, trying to collect a little information about the players, where they played at university, et cetera, et cetera. All that kind of informed my later, you know, current work with where I now do the commentary. It's a lot easier with teams that I'm familiar covering. I mean, one, you know, in the beginning of the season, you'll hear it's a little rough when I don't know certain teams, certain players, but as the season goes on, by the end, usually I'm able to identify players without having to like look at a cheat sheet, which, as you can imagine, is very difficult when you're holding onto a camera, you know, working the studio with a replay, and you're also trying to look up on a phone or a piece of paper who someone is. Because by the time you find the person, the play is on to the next, and it's not really even worthwhile. You know, those are all kind of steps that I was able to take forward into taking the commentary, the current iteration, and, you know, also just accepting the fact that some commentary is generally better than no commentary. And so if I can at least just get the goalkeeper, the top three players, maybe defensively, the top three offensive players names down, and that'll serve as a building block until I can kind of get all the players' names, you know, on the field, you know, and then that way, at least there's something, you know, coming in. And, you know, a lot of these teams are not used to even hearing any commentary. So if I can start with that and then build into it, it's better than just not doing it at all.
Yeah. How'd you find Alfred?
Alfred contacted me. I mean, I reached out to different universities. I put something out on social media. And of course, all the games are, you know, they live on YouTube after the live stream ends. So Alfred found us. He emailed me, and Alfred is incredibly passionate about it. I was worried about, you know, are we going to be able to make this work with, you know, an amateur league with not the most budget? And Alfred was like, I want to participate. And so, you know, Alfred came on, and now, you know, whenever he can make it, you know, it's excellent. And I'll always get people asking, when's the guy with the English accent coming? I'm like, he'll come when he likes it, but he truly enjoys it. I mean, he comes because he enjoys watching the games while participating in the storylines. And he has experience because he did commentary back in Sierra Leone before he moved. But he was saying that they don't always have the same availability of games. There's such a competition for commentators to get those roles, even, you know, whether paid or voluntary. And so here, you know, he was really happy to see. He was surprised that I like kind of got right back to him and said, yeah, come on out, do a game. He thought it would be like, I don't know, a waiting list or something. I was like, oh man, come on. But yeah, we're figuring out how to work together. Sometimes we get so excited that we talk over one another, but I think most of the time we do a pretty good job of kind of like back and forth on you know, give and take.
I fully agree. At least to me, he's become kind of a staple of what you guys are doing. Obviously, I've met him now a bunch of times, and great guy for sure. I think the addition of, I'm glad he reached out because he's been a very good addition to the Virginia amateur scene, I think. So you got the equipment down and the commentary piece down, and then the live, and we talked a little bit about the overlay. I want to talk about the replay a little bit. Sometimes you do replays, and I'm like, why did he replay that? Like, not, because in a game where there's not a lot of chances, are you searching for other things to replay? Like, in your head, are you sitting there thinking, it'd be great if we got three replays this half? Or is it just as it comes? That's how you're like, how do you decide, obviously goals and things like that, but other plays?
Yeah. So,
and also, how does it work?
So the replay, I'll just start with how it works. The instant replay feature, it's just a hotkey that I have on the board. I can set it up in my studio. And so the whole game is kind of being recorded in the studio, as, you know, I record it also on the camera SD card. But it's only remembering the last like 10 seconds. So when I hit the R key, which is my little hotkey, it saves the last 10 seconds of the recording. And then it sits there. And then when the ball goes out of bounds or whatever, I hit this other button that goes and plays the replay. And I try to do it for most shots, fouls that, you know, maybe weren't a foul or maybe were a really bad foul, you know, penalty kick decisions, of course, goalkeeper saves, really good tackles. But I often, if there is a, you know, one of those plays that is made, and then play continues, I may or may not have a time to reach over and hit the key. Cause if it's just me and I'm also on the camera, I don't want to miss what's going on. So that's why sometimes I may not, hit the button in time to record something that is actually playoff, replay worthy. I could go back in and, go back, you know, I can manually do it, but in the heat of the game, I'm usually not going to do that because it's a lot more effort to go and find that sequence of.
That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, if I had someone who was like a devoted studio person, that would be more feasible. But sometimes, I guess, when I do an instant replay for a shot that went like 30 yards over the goal, and you're wondering why, it's because the goalkeeper then has to go and retrieve that ball, and we're just kind of like looking and seeing nothing. So I'm like,
oh, that makes total sense.
Better a replay of the terrible shot than just watching the goalkeeper run and go get the ball. But yeah, no, it's sometimes it's like, that probably wasn't worth it. And there's really no answer as to why sometimes I do it and sometimes I don't, other than I just didn't feel like it.
Oh, that's hilarious. No, that's a good reason. That's a good reason, though.
Yeah.
So how do you, now running the leagues and you've got your normal job, so you run the leagues and you run the media company, how do you have any time to do any, and you play, well, not at the moment because you're injured, unfortunately, but do you have any time to do anything else ever?
I try to make time is the simple answer. I thankfully I love what I do. If I didn't love this filming and, you know, the running of the leagues, it wouldn't be possible. I would have burnt out quite a while ago because I don't have a lot of time. And my wife will tell you, thankfully, you know, my wife, Sydney, is super supportive of, you know, growing the business, you know, and growing the leagues. But we don't have a ton of time together. But, you know, it's like I work the 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. I come home usually for a very brief time around like, say, 7 o'clock, and I quickly grab all my equipment and then I'm off to go film a game, live stream at the VSSL Tuesday or Thursday. Saturday is usually devoted to UPSL. You know, usually I spend some time in the morning either editing or my wife and I'll go for a bike ride or something. Sunday is all filming, all Super League and whatever other league I'm going to be doing. Monday, usually we have a little bit of time. There's not too many games, but it is pretty all consuming. But, you know, recently, you know, we scheduled a vacation last year. We went on vacation and I kind of had to just start scheduling those vacations with the acceptance of I'm going to miss some stuff and I'm going to have some people who are able to cover. Cause, you know, a couple of years ago or even last year, I really struggled to schedule anything out because there's always some game that I'll be missing, whether it's fall, spring, you know, summer, there's tournaments, winter, there's state cup tournaments. And so I would always be afraid of missing something, but now it's like, you know, we're scheduling a vacation this end of May and June, and there's going to be probably some pretty crucial games that I'll miss, but you know, you can't completely, you know, ignore, you know, your own personal life and, you know, your relationship life, for work. So it's just right now, just getting people in place who are able to replicate, or at least to some degree, do what I do, working for DMV Sports Media. And I think that's the next step is really fully replicating what I do, and leaving people behind to be able to do it.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat a little bit. When it's like, hey, time to get away for like a week. Cause I haven't. And then I have, like the same as you, I haven't done it. We haven't done it yet. Cause, my wife coaches volleyball as well. It's like, we're always going to miss something. And same as you recently were like, well, yeah, we're just going to miss some stuff. Oh, well. Like,
yeah.
It is a bit hard because growing up is like, if you've committed to something, you should see it all the way through. And then it's your life changes and it's like, well, can't really, it's not feasible anymore. If you want to not drive yourself insane. But what's the future looking like of the business of, obviously you said you maybe having some more people that can replicate what you do, but you're starting to expand. I think you've been, your services have been provided for off memory, at least like 10 or 12 leagues and tournaments, if not more. There's more of you, then you can, the services can increase and the quality increases, right? Everything, when you bring more money in, you can get some better cameras or get some editors to help with the overlays and the logos of different things, and all that stuff can increase. So what's the future looking like for you and also for the Super Leagues?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think short term, you know, what you just spoke on is exactly what I'm looking for: more camera operators, more, you know, commentary providers, guys who want to own their craft and, you know, and learn how to do the commentary. It would be great if I can find some people who are able to operate a camera and do commentary, but that's probably something that would be learned rather than just a skill that most people have. My wife is helping me outsource to bring in some people who can help with the video editing at a cost that is sustainable with my current budget. I tend to, not to say I don't have a long-term plan, but I tend to react to, you know, react to the market and what's kind of in need. As far as the Super League, we are trying to strengthen kind of the bond between Maryland and Virginia Super League into, you know, those teams playing one another. So it is kind of more of a regional thing, not during season, but in postseason, having those leagues play one another. You know, it's always exciting having, you know, the top teams, you know, from Virginia, be it Virginia Dream versus Steel Pulse, or now, you know, there's Christos up north, Arlington just joined in Virginia. Imagine if, you know, maybe in a year we were able to have like a four team Christos, Steel Pulse, Arlington, Virginia Dream, you know, cross play in a playoff series. I think that would be really interesting. One thing I didn't mention earlier about the Super League, and you know this, but maybe some don't. It is entirely a democratic league. So while I am kind of the servant of the league, I help, you know, facilitate all the logistics, facilitate the meetings. I don't actually get a vote in league matters. And I want it to be that way because, you know, the league, it's the team run league, and that's how it was founded originally in Maryland, but now in Virginia. And it's kind of a safeguard for me because when teams turn around and say, why is this the policy? Like, this is a stupid policy. I said, well, if you look at our bylaws, you'll look and see I don't have a vote on league matters. So this is something you'll have to take up in the manager's meeting. And so I kind of let the teams vote on that. But of course, I have an influence. Of course, you know, a lot of my suggestions are, you know, listened to by the managers. And I think just growing right now in Virginia, our biggest impediment is field space. So we're working on that. And if we can find more field space, higher quality fields that are accessible to all of our teams, that'll allow us to grow. I think a second division is a must in Virginia, the way we have it in Maryland, because as we talked about earlier, promotion relegation is a huge component of making sure that, you know, the best teams are playing against the best teams. And, you know, it needs to be a merit-based system. So that's kind of my short-term goals.
That makes sense. Have you, in terms of the interplay, have you considered like a League Cup or FA Cup style? Like, I know you said not during season, but eventually during the season where you would draw like out of a hat or whatever, and you'd have every 3 weeks or whatever, it would be like round of 32 or however many teams it is, and everybody's in there, both from both leagues, both divisions.
Yeah, it's been suggested. It's a great idea. Right now, I think the biggest impediment is just that Virginia plays during the midweek and Maryland plays on Sundays. And so playing, you know, concurrent with the season is going to be really tough, especially, especially in springtime. Right now with the U.S. Amateur Cup and the Werner Fricker Cup, which is like the Region One Cup, Maryland has two teams representing in those and two teams from the Super League, Christos and Steel Pulse. So it makes it so difficult. We're going to have tons of midweek games for Maryland. You know, it's all kind of backed up. Plus the MDV Cup is still going on and will be going on because Christos is in the U.S. Open Cup. Whole bunch of logistics that I'm not going to, but it is just things to consider in, are we able to add more fixtures in Virginia? I know a lot of teams play in the UPSL or in other regional leagues, like Estudiantes and EPSL. And so those are all considerations. You know, if we had teams that were like, we're just a Super League team and that's all we do, not saying that they should or shouldn't do that, but I think it would be more feasible to put up like an FA Cup style tournament. But right now I kind of have to use what time and availability the teams have given me. And, you know, so right now it's probably not possible, but I think that that is a great idea. You're not the first one to say it, although you may have recommended it way before. And maybe I'm just thinking of you as the one who initially recommended it.
Maybe it could have been
maybe
me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I throw ideas your way all the time. Just as like, oh, whoa, what if?
No. I mean, here's what happens. It's the same way with my wife. She'll come up with an idea. I'll explain all the reasons why it can't happen. And then I'll think about it. And then I'll be like, that's something actually we need to make happen. So I may say no initially, but it's it's there. The idea is in my head. And so I will definitely be trying to figure out if we can, you know, find a time where that's possible, or maybe play it after the season. I don't know.
It's interesting. Like you mentioned, the Maryland teams are in different situations because obviously the Virginia one is in midweek, but so a lot of them play UPSL or different leagues during on the weekend. And then in Maryland, it's the other way around where they play the Super League on the weekend and then in different cups during the week. I wonder. Yeah, that is probably not. It's like it's difficult because all the field spaces and then some of the leagues that have already been established in, I think there's a lot more leagues in Virginia than there are in Maryland. But also you've got the UPSL division in Maryland that, like, I don't know. It's like there's a way to make it all work. But the cooperation, and obviously that would need to be it's a lot of work to get all the different people and to agree on things, as I'm sure you know.
Go ahead. Sorry. I was going to say, as far as, like getting the actual UPSL, like the teams to work together, they're always receptive. UPSL league, less so. They kind of just do their thing and they schedule what they're going to schedule. And then they're not really willing to work around anything else. Even US Open Cup, I think I've seen times where teams have to play back-to-back US Open Cup and UPSL matches. So that's kind of a huge impediment, but UPSL is the in kind of league right now. I'm not going to say whether or not that's a good or bad thing, but it does make it difficult to work around. You know, other leagues are willing to, you know, say if it was just to give an example, Maryland Super League and APL, and there was a cup tournament that we had scheduled, of course we're going to give a bye or whatever to our team that's playing in that because we want them to do well. APL will probably do the same, but UPSL will be like, nope, you better be here at 1 p.m. on Sunday because you're playing, and I don't care what else you got going on. So,
yeah. That's, do you ever, when you're deciding what games to film, have teams, like, do you try and make it even throughout the season? Like each team gets however many games-ish. Like, obviously, it's not going to be exact, but do you have, obviously, if you've got, like, a Steel Pulse Christos game, you're going to want that one to be filmed. So do you have teams that are in maybe like the second division or lower down in the first division that are like, hey, why don't we get as many games on the live stream, or is that like worked out beforehand? You mentioned bylaws before, and I think maybe getting into policy would be a bit boring for people listening, but but do you, like, is that a consideration, or is that, are those conversations had, or is that kind of accepted that every team gets about the same amount of games and the top teams maybe get an extra one or two just because whatever, or how does that work?
Well, the answer is very simple. All games are live streamed. All MSSL and all VSSL matches are live streamed. You know, as far as me personally, I try to be as many as I can. We have an excellent partner up in Maryland we work with, and shout out to Big Mo, who is another excellent cameraman. Doesn't do the commentary, but he has a really good setup, and I learned a lot from him. Actually, he's been doing this much longer than I have, so I've learned a lot of videography from him. But you know, short answer, all matches are live streamed. I try to provide, you know, the top matches with maybe a little bit of something else in terms of commentary and you know, whatever else, but you know, everyone gets the same coverage, and that's how we've kind of built it in, because we think that just because you're a Division II team doesn't mean that you shouldn't be getting coverage, because you may be the next Steel Pulse Christo. Steel Pulse started out in Division II. Some may not know that, but they started out in Division II. They worked their way up through, and you know, now obviously they're one of the well-known teams in the area. But I feel like a lot of teams, now I'm going off on a completely separate side tangent.
Go for it.
Yeah, a lot of teams now, like, they're not willing to start off in second division. There are just so many leagues that if we say, hey, you know, all new teams start off in Division II and then work their way up, and there's two slots out of eight teams, so it's really feasible that you could do it in one season, they say, oh, no, but, like, the UPSL is just going to let us right in. Or they, you know, just any league, it doesn't have to be UPSL. Any league is going to just, they'll let us into their first division. So I think we're going to go do that. And then we're left with no recourse other than to say, well, should we just not have a Division II and then we'll get more teams? And that kind of undermines our principles. But that's, of course, not what we're going to do. We're going to hold firm. So we do miss out on a good amount of teams because, you know, whether it's their own decision that the managers, or maybe the managers are like, look, we'd love to come in, but the players just won't play for a Division II team. You know, and that's an unfortunate situation because it makes it really hard. And I know when everyone talks about having this integrated system of all the leagues working together with multiple stratified divisions, that's a reason why, not to say it wouldn't work, but a reason, something we'd have to overcome is this opposition to playing lower leagues by teams and by players, that, you know, hey, you have to work your way up rather than just being there. Because I'm sure you and I both know there's plenty of teams in different leagues, in each league, that don't deserve to be a Division I team. Like, not to say they don't, they shouldn't ever be, but they're not at that level yet. And everyone knows it except for maybe the team themselves, but that would have to change if we were to get there.
That's interesting and very true. I think I don't know. I'll save that musing for off camera.
Fair enough.
Where can the people find you and support what you're doing and all the leagues? Where should they go if they want to, if they're interested in checking it out or supporting?
First and foremost, follow DMV Sports Media on YouTube or subscribe, and you won't regret it. I mean, if you're in any small capacity, you like watching amateur, semi-professional games of all leagues in the area, subscribe and you won't regret it. We cover, as you mentioned, like 12 to 15 different competitions. Probably will be more by the end of this year. UPSL, EPSL, VSSL, MSSL. Yeah, I'm not even going to name them all, but it's a lot of leagues. And, you know, we're always streaming something, you know, throughout the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. There's games pretty much every week throughout the season, sometimes more days. And so subscribe to us there. DMV Soccer Videos on, excuse me, on Instagram. That's where we post the short form highlights of all those games that are live streamed. So if you don't have time and you just have 60 seconds, 90 seconds, just pop on DMV Soccer Videos. On Twitter, it's media_DMV, media DMV. That's where you'll see the soccer political side of me with regards to how I think it should be or why the current system is broken. But also I post a bunch of just links to live streams that are going on. We are working on a new website. I do have dmvsportsmedia.com, but don't look at that right now. It's not the best website, and it's not going to give you any more information than the social media, but I am working on having that website built up so that in the near future, DMV Sports Media will be a spot where teams can book, you know, and see my availability on a calendar with, you know, costs, testimonials, past games, and see, you know, a page where like that, whatever game is going on live is there. But for now, you can just see all that on YouTube. Is pretty much the best way to find a portfolio. But yeah, those are for DMV Sports Media. And then of course, for the league, there's follow Maryland Super Soccer League on Instagram, and then Virginia Super Soccer League as well. They both have accounts on Instagram.
Any last nickels for the people, or any takeaways that you want them to consider before we get you out of here?
Yeah, I would, my if I had one takeaway for people to kind of consider, I would say support your local team, or at least consider supporting your local team. Everyone's so concerned with, you know, what MLS team is nearby, you know, assuming you're a soccer fan in the country. And some of us who are disillusioned with the system in the United States, we just support the English Premier League, Bundesliga, whatever. And I completely understand that. I understand your frustration, but I don't think that's necessarily the long-term right answer either. I think we should be supporting domestic. And if your answer isn't MLS, then maybe we consider USL Championship, USL League One, USL League Two, or, you know, NISA or grassroots level soccer, which is what I've chosen. You know, you're able to interact with players in a way that you won't in any way see in any of those other leagues. I mean, in our live streams, for instance, you may have one of the players for one of the teams getting subbed off and then logging in and speaking to you. And it's just a really unique atmosphere, really unique kind of subculture that if you haven't checked it out yet, I would really recommend just giving it a glance and seeing if it's something that you might want to be part of.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, because I'm in it, but couldn't agree more. For those listening, thank you, appreciate you as always, and we will see you guys next time. Peace.
All right. Did I have a? Oh wait, you already asked a question. Thank you.